Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so proud to know that you've got this fellowship.
Thank you.
And I'd love to hear some of your new work.
Yes, so thank you to the Kentucky Arts Council for the fellowship. And I also wanted to give props to the Kentucky Foundation for Women, and especially the Hopscotch House, which is this wonderful farmhouse that they support for women artists in Kentucky, artists of all stripes, so visual artists, musicians, and they have very generously over the past year and a half given me several short-term residencies there. And so a lot of the poems that were in my Al Smith Fellowship also came from my time there. So I feel like these are very Kentucky-born poems. So I was really pleased, of course, to get the fellowship with this group. So I'm going to read all newer things. And I thought I would start with the most Kentucky of them all. When I finished my first book, I gave myself a set of rules, kind of silly rules, that I couldn't write about certain things that were in the first book. And that didn't last very long. And one of them was horses. And of course, Kentucky is a terrible place to say that you're not going to write about horses because it's so much a part of the state's history and culture. And I've been fascinated by them and by horse racing for a long time. I started getting into the stories of Kentucky Derby winners. And one that fascinated me the most, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, is the story of Barbaro, who won the Kentucky Derby, I think in 2006. And they thought he was set to win the Triple Crown. And then when he went to the Preakness, he stumbled coming out of the gate really badly. And they tried to rehabilitate him, but were unable to, so they eventually had to put him down. In the meantime, they did all of these things. They put him in a sling. They did surgery on his feet. And he got get-well cards and letters from people all over the world. And there's a documentary about it. And so I was really fascinated by that. And just the power dynamics, I guess, of horse racing. You know, these animals are worth so much money, but they don't have any say in what their fate is. So anyway, I decided that I would try to write a poem in the voice of Barbaro. This is that poem. Before being euthanized, Barbaro speaks to his trainer. I did not need to feel the whip, for I knew you'd made me to rule the world I moved through. So I moved through others like me, like they were air. Blinder, bit, and hair, each image grew, then fell to sweat and breath, a mouth of iron, hooves on dirt, and a roar so long and loud I couldn't bear it. Then a slip, a skittery start, a snap, my pastern bone, a constellation, a knife, a hoof half missing when I woke, and you heavy with sorrow. Brief green, white sky, a mass, 4 points of pain, a sling to keep me hovering, and you so low, knowing no longer would the rhythm of my thunder be the measure of our worth. Did I always look safe enough to love? Like a horse, you have always shied from the dead. Like the dead, I am about to run far beyond the dark prairie. Which one of us is least afraid now? I like poems that give voices to objects or people or things that we don't think of as having a kind of internal life, but what if they did, or what if they do and we can't hear it and we could hear it. It's really a good exercise for me when I am tired of poems that I think are too close, I guess, to myself, or, you know, I just feel like I don't have any stories from my own life that I want to tell anymore or that I think are boring. So what else is out there? Those kinds of poems I really like quite a bit.
Share another?
Sure. I thought, because that one is darker, I guess, that I would share a summertime poem. And I know that during National Poetry Month, you had students on who read sonnets, and I love the sonnet form. I have been feeling this past summer very nostalgic, as summer often makes one, about my past summers and my childhood summers, which now looking back, I think were rather magical. And my family would go on long road trips to California, which was good. We were all very good travelers, you know, like nobody threw up. Or, you know, we didn't like beat each other in the back seat. I have two siblings. I think it's because the Walkman had been invented and we each had our own. So, and we could read. We could all three read in the car, which was good. So we were occupied. But anyway, I've been thinking about those road trips and missing them. And so I wanted to write a sonnet, but also an ubi sunt poem. Ubi sunt in Latin just means where are. There's a famous one, where are the snows of yesteryear? You know, it sort of looks to the past. And where are all these things, all these people that we love so much? Where have they gone? I wanted to play with that form a little bit. So this is an ubi sunt poem for the family road trip. Summer meant a cooler packed with pudding pops, ham and cheese on Wonder White, sweet tea brewed in bottles on the dash, teen beat, flip-flops, I Spy, and Def Leppard on cassette. Pursued by wanderlust, Dad taught us to map the route, heads bowed as one over the Rand McNally, in pilgrimage to tourist shrines from Butte to Birmingham, Disney to Death Valley. Now it's 18 blocks to work, and the landscape never changes. I long for yesteryear's long halls, my little brother's off-key singing, my sister's knock-knock jokes, the hopeful shape of Polaroids and roadside souvenirs, back when I still loved what the future would be bringing. And I'm actually going to go on half a road trip with my dad in just a couple of weeks. My mom is driving out to Washington State with him, and I'm going to fly out there, and then I'm going to drive back. So we may relive some of those moments, eat a lot of bad sandwiches, and, you know, stop at places like the largest gopher in the world or something like that. I love those places. So I'm looking really forward to that.
One more.
I've been working on these poems, these love poems, and I was telling someone the other day that I don't think that I am particularly gifted at the love poem. I have to trick myself into telling myself that I'm writing about something else. And so a lot of these poems have been growing out of landscapes. And this one landscape that I'm working with right now is the tall grass prairie, which covers a large swath of the Midwest, covered a much larger swath a long time ago. But it's a beautiful place. And I love wind through grass. I just love the sound of it and the feel of a great wind, like it's just going to take you somewhere. And then, of course, the names of all the flora and fauna are just so rich. And I enjoy trying to work with those different vocabularies in my poems. So this is a love poem for the tall grass prairie. Dear wind, I wish to succumb to. I find in the curves you carve from fine-grained Lois the contours of my very own face, and I admire this landscape's devotion to longing. The button bush longs for the river, the flint hills long for green blades. The bed tamped deep in big blue stem longs for the warmth of the buck last seen in a long-ago year without fire. I have lain in that bed, its shape like the whorl of a man's shorn hair, and longed for the mercy of lightning. Could I know the prairie now as it was before the plow, before the wheel, before the wagon and rifle, I would plunge headlong into switchgrass and ask it to swallow the length of my shadow, to thresh this longing from me. I would ask the blaze struck by the sky to bleed me red and real as the bodies of bison used to be. Here, in this invisible riot of roots, this furious ground, these coarse hills, the flame's blue lust burns each spring into blooming.
That's pretty passionate.
Thank you. Yes, I just have to tell myself that I'm just writing about weeds or grass or the river or the mountains or the sky.
It's good to hear you say that because it speaks to your craft.
Just a different way, I think, to try to express emotions, to explore how can you use a landscape maybe in a different way other than just rendering the landscape by itself. And so sometimes to do that, you put it in a different context and and you see what happens. But, you know, often the language itself lends you a hand as you're writing. It tells you the kind of poem, which sounds very, like, mystical, but it sort of tells you the kind of poem that it belongs in, I think. I love studying words, just lists and lists of words, and thinking about how you can use them. There's just so many wonderful words and landscapes out there to try to do something with. So it's great that I've got this fellowship that will buy me some time and maybe some travel to spend more time in those places.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations again.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Yeah, I'm really excited about it.